Hi, today's March 6, 2022, and this is Movie Podcast 396. I'm Todd Ogasawara, my good friend John Westfall. I was going to say another name, but I don't know what name that was. I was going to give myself
that's
a new name.
That's conspiracy that you don't know who you are. I guess you're just learning about yourself still, Todd.
You know, I could just be the Todd identity, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, first thing I wanted to mention is something I read on a bunch of places, but I've got a reference from 9 to 5 Google. Podcasters $50,000 to $300,000 grants to make video versions of their podcasts. I should know, John, nobody has made such an offer to me.
Well, you know, we already have fives of listeners. So, you know, maybe we can get Google interested when we get to tens. Yeah.
But I find that interesting because, you know, I have noticed a couple of items pop up in my YouTube recommended list that are audio only podcasts that have like a, you know, a thumbnail picture as the only video part of the content. So they are already there on YouTube, just without any video.
Yeah. It's interesting. The creators that some of them that I follow will do a podcast, an audio podcast, and they will also do a video, but it's a different set of content. You know, it's a different topic. Yeah. Which I think is interesting to sort of allow them a little bit of both, the best of both worlds, both audio content and video content. But the whole idea of just do the exact same thing, but do it in video form, that seems kind of like it doesn't make a direct move. So maybe that's why the grants are needed. They need something to actually incentivize them to come up with different content than their audio content.
Yeah, that's a good point, you know, because you know, one of the longest running podcast / video feed is the Twit Network, you know, This Week in Tech, which expanded into all kinds of different, mostly technology podcasts. And their podcasts, not all of them, but in general, they tend to be, you know, a video version of their audio podcast. And so it's all talking heads. I'm going to guess that Google is going after people like Marcus Brownlee, I think his name is. Who do demos and, you know, very visual kinds of presentations that really don't fit an audio-only podcast mode. So, yeah, if they offer us money, you know. Or maybe
have,
not.
you know, YouTube has already actually had him do a few series for them. So it's an interesting – he was one of the first ones I saw where YouTube was just like, you know what, instead of making your own content, make some content for us, and we'll, you know, it'll be good for both brands.
Yeah. So, well, we'll see, and I'll let you know or not if we get offered money. I don't really expect to, by the way, but who knows? Next item up is March 8th, which is 2 days away, this week Tuesday, Apple's first event of 2022. So the list I've got from Mac Rumors and other places, iPhone SE 5G, a new iPad Air, powered up Mac Mini, and a 13-inch MacBook Pro. None of which appeals to me. I mean, if I needed one, they would appeal to me, but I don't need any of them right now. So what do you think? Anything in that group?
Nothing in that list sounds all that interesting to me. And spring announcements are traditionally lower, lower ticket items, lower excitement items, with the exception of the Apple Watch, which actually became a thing in spring. It was announced for the first time in fall, but it was it came out in April. So we're quickly coming upon the anniversary of the Apple Watch, come to think of it.
Go ahead.
But yeah, there's nothing on this list that screams at me like I'm ready to get out my credit card and buy something.
Right. Well, you know, in the early days, though, the spring was a big deal. The iPhone was announced in January and became available in March. And iPad was something similar. I think it was announced in January and available in April. And I remember because I got an email from Apple or UPS or somebody on April 1st saying, we can't deliver your iPad on Saturdays because Hawaii doesn't have UPS Saturday deliveries. But and I thought it was April Fool's joke, but it was for real.
Yeah, really evil April Fool's joke. So I, you know, one thing I am in the market for this year, I would like a new iPad Pro. It's about time for me to upgrade one, but I think that'll be later in the year. And I would be always interested in any new accessories that are unique sorts of things, but Apple doesn't typically announce accessories anyway. They just kind of show up on Apple.com and, you know, in the random stores of the things that Apple deems important enough to put in there. Right. But I did, this did get me thinking about items that I would want to see Apple do. You know, a new software service offering would be nice to see. This all looks like it's very hardware related. So I came up with a list of things I would like to see.
Okay.
We can talk through them and you can tell me if you would find this useful or not. The first would wait,
John, I got to say something first. I might have to mute myself because I started to giggle because I saw the poster behind you that has instructions on how to pet a kitty.
Yes, it is. I'm standing today, so Todd is actually seeing a bit more of my home office. And yeah, it is an oatmeal comic. The other one next to it, so yeah. And I'll send the links to, I'll put the links in our show notes if anyone's interested. But the it's the oatmeal, these are I guess about almost 10 years old now. But the one is how to pet a kitty, and the other is how web design goes to hell.
Oh, yeah.
And the how web design goes to hell is really very accurate if you've ever designed a website for someone else. so I'll put links in our show notes.
All right. I'm glad sorry to interrupt you, John.
Are finding my taste in artwork to be
yes, I am
attractive.
Enjoying them.
Okay, so anyway, the first thing I would like to see would be Apple Music model for Apple Books and audiobooks.
Like Audible.
You know, basically an all-you-can-read sort of thing where you can download, read, or listen to audiobooks. I suspect this will not happen anytime in the near future because I expect that Apple probably does make a good amount of money off of books and off of audiobooks, or at least enough that they don't want to offer an all-you-can-listen or all-you-can-read sort of thing. But it would be nice, and I think I would definitely use it quite a bit. But I don't know. Do you read a lot on Apple Books or listen to Apple audiobooks?
No, I do not. I am an Audible subscriber, which is, you know, a subsidiary of Amazon. And so that's pretty much how I get all my books. And I buy very few paper books. I can't remember the last time I bought a paper book. And I have bought very few digital books, with the exception of comic books, which I have a subscription to. But, you know, it's interesting you say about unlimited, because it's not quite unlimited, but Audible's, if you have their annual pass, which for which they raised the price several times the last couple of years, I think it's up to $150 a year now, which gets you 12 audio books of your choice. But also there's something called the Audible Plus catalog that gives you sort of not unlimited, but lots and lots of other audio content that you don't have to pay for, including some pretty popular books, not just, you know, out of print or in the public domain. I mean, some pretty well-known authors and so forth. So I don't know. I don't think it's as far-fetched as you might think, John. Maybe it might even be included in Apple One. Wouldn't that be pretty neat? Because Apple One's kind of expensive.
Yeah, that would be very nice. So that would be, and of all the things on my wish list, that's probably the most likely to happen. My other ones, well, maybe the third one would be something similar.
Okay.
And the second one's pretty lackluster, but continuing to add extensions to FaceTime and messaging. I like where we're going with SharePlay and messaging and all of that. Of course, there's the red or the green bubble, blue bubble debate about should Apple support RCS and all of that, but I do like the idea of being able to do things with people, feel more connected to people over FaceTime messaging phones. In fact, someone had even said, why doesn't Apple, I saw it today in an article, why doesn't Apple just combine FaceTime messaging and the phone app all into one app?
That's a good question.
The People Hub or something like that. And your contacts already sort of does that. When you tap on a person's contact, you've got all the quick shortcuts for calling or messaging them and all that. But it is interesting how those three things we think of as separate, but they're really all related to the same thing, reaching out and touching someone, to quote an old ad slogan.
Yeah.
The third thing, this is something that I don't know. Maybe I am a weird user in that I end up using a lot of shared machines, you know, classroom PCs and lab computers and such. But I would really like to see iCloud.com become my internet homepage. in that I could go to iCloud.com, log in, and it's got the two-factor authentication, et cetera.
Right.
And it would have basically a web version of Safari that would have load content through Apple's private relay proxy so that I have, a certain level of VPN-like connectivity.
Yep, yep.
Have access to iCloud Drive, which is already there, but iCloud passwords and bookmarks would be really nice so that if you are on a shared PC and you would like to just check something, check your email, check something that's a little bit more secure, you could go to one place and it's almost like you're at your MacBook or at your PC. And I think I would find that very useful. But like I said, I might be a weirdo who actually uses shared PCs.
Well, you know, John, although you're much younger than me, you are getting older. And I think you're mm-hmm. you're getting kind of a retro thing. You want Yahoo Portable back.
Yes, I do. I did, or Google had my homepage at
That's
some
right.
point too.
I like that one.
You're right. It is a very retro thing. And as I think about shared PCs and shared computers, it is pretty rare today to find people having to use the same PCs and the same computers. We're kind of beyond computer labs in most places.
Yep.
Everyone has a computer that they're issued at their at their company. In fact, I'm waiting until we finally get to the point where most colleges ditch computer labs for just docking stations and every student is issued a device. And some of the more expensive colleges already do that, but other institutions don't have those deep of pockets quite yet.
Yeah, well, although there is, I think, a place for computer labs for kind of very vertical kind of things. I was thinking, my daughter graduated years ago from college, but I remember at her college, they assumed everybody had a notebook or, some kind of computing device in their dorm available to them. They made printers available in the dorms, shared printers, mm-hmm. and they provided the paper. Did they provide paper? Yeah, they provided the paper and the ink and that sort of thing. And but in the library, there was a computer lab, but not for people to sit down and do email and stuff. They had large format scanners and peripherals that typical college student would not have in their dorm. This is before the iPhone could do scanning really well.
Yeah.
So, that might not be needed much either. But they had sort of, high-end peripherals for students to use for various projects. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think we still will see some for vertical niche, although, a lot of that can be accomplished with terminal services and, cloud computing, I guess, is the way to put it now. And, what we used to think of as a mainframe, cloud is getting much more powerful. So
there you go.
My fourth thing, which is a weird one that I just realized this week, I always thought Preview was a pretty good PDF editor. And then I realized it's missing a few key features. And I always knew it was missing the forms functionality, but it's missing the link, the internal link functionality.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Creating a link in a PDF to another area of that PDF.
Oh, okay. Like a # HTML link, yeah.
Yeah, so I would like to see Preview get more PDF editing functionality. That is probably also a weird one that I have, but it would be nice. And then my last two items are, something cool for Apple Watch. I don't know what that would be. A new feature, a new band style. Not even new band colors. That's not all that interesting to me. But a new band style would be kind of cool. We haven't had a different style in a long time that Apple's come out with, other than the loops.
I'm looking at my Apple Health thing. Does it have pulse? No, it's heart rate, same thing.
Yeah, heart rate. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the thing we've both been wanting that would be really nice, but it's not been rumored to happen at this event, would be a new version of AirPods Pro that do some sort of health tracking.
Yes.
But I think we're still a half year or a full year away from that.
I think you're right.
And then the other thing that Apple does not sell, they sell third party, but they do not have their own. And I don't know if it's just that it would not be easy to figure out what the Apple user would need in this, or if they just haven't thought about, but an Apple bag, a backpack or a messenger bag or a briefcase or something that was specially designed for someone who lives in the Apple ecosystem. So pockets for, and even something that have multiple options, pockets.
That is a great idea.
Yeah.
I it never occurred to me, but you're right. And I was just, as you were talking, I said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was thinking, I'm always looking for a good iPad bag, whether it's iPad mini or a regular iPad, that can also do something else. And maybe you've had a built-in AirTag, so, you know, it's not obvious that it's trackable if somebody, you know, swipes it. And maybe if it had some physical security features to make it really annoying if somebody does steal it. I think that'd be very cool.
I will tell you, I know Apple can make a decent iPad case, because about 3 years ago, I was on eBay and I had a standing search for, I think I just looked actually for iPad case or whatever. And I found a red, in the Apple product red color scheme, red iPad case that had two front pockets, one on either side, kind of vertically alongside of it. It had the Apple logo silk screen down the front. It had a tablet compartment that you could fit your iPad in, and then it had a rear zippered compartment and a long enough strap that it could be worn crossbody. And I use it from time to time whenever that's all I'm carrying is my iPad. I'll use it around campus. And last year, someone mentioned it, and I said, yeah, I have no idea who made this, why it was made, et cetera, who came used. And they suggested what I think is probably the most likely scenario is that it was designed and made by Apple for Apple Store employees. And if you think about what an Apple Store employee would have to carry around with them through the store to get their job done in terms of, you know, a device and any, you know, accessories and pens and that sort of thing, it's exactly the sort of thing that they would design. So ergonomically, it's a great design case. Unfortunately, I have no idea if it was ever sold to the public.
Yeah.
End result, Apple can make a decent bag because I own one. I just wish that they would make some other ones and options for people.
Yeah, and I should note that both John and I are what you would call bag aficionados. We probably have way too many of them. I know you give yours away, so you're a good person. I just hoard them. While you were talking, I thought, has Apple ever made a bag that was, you know, publicly available? So I searched for Apple made bag, that's all. And I did not find anything like yours, but I did find a bag made of Apple skins. And I put it in our show notes. It's $75. It's got 23 reviews with 5 stars. It says, made from Apple skins, the byproduct of the juicing industry in Europe. The Apple Mini, and that's the name of the bag, not the what it fits. The Apple Mini is designed to ensure that you are able to carry all your essentials wherever you go. The Apple Leather Mini carries lip balm, earphones, or 15 cards. So it's pretty tiny. It's not like a, you know, for an Apple Mini case, but Apple skins. So I think Apple should make a bag made of Apple skins. I think that would be fun.
I mean, why not? You know? Really, that would be very interesting. And we'll just have to sort of see what Apple ever comes up with. And I do say, like I said, that I could understand that there's a lot of different variations of what even someone who lives deep in the Apple ecosystem will carry. Yeah. You know, I think the minimum is an iPhone and a MacBook or an iPad, or maybe all three.
Well, plus
even more than that, but.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, and we carry, you know, earbuds or headphones or whatevers, you know, sometimes both, Apple Pencil. You know, people carry a lot of junk around with them these days, even though it's less than it used to be. Huh, what a good idea. Apple, do something,
please. Now we shall see. If Apple steals this, we'll know that they're one of our fives of listeners.
Yay.
And if, you know, you're listening, Apple, and you don't want any trouble from me, just, you know, give me maybe, you know, a couple $1,000 and you can have the idea and go from there. A
couple thousand shares. How's that?
Yeah, let's go with that. Just easier all around.
Right? It's easier to transfer. And
Yeah.
Shows that they care. Thousand shares for John. 1,000 shares for John.
Yeah. Say that. That'd be nice. I mean, it'll go nice with the 5 or so I own already. You know, have another 1,000 be good. We could even do 995 and make an even 1,000.
There you go. You're not greedy.
Yeah. So speaking of interesting things that I wish I was, you know, in the past, you know, if I could go back in time and buy shares, that would be kind of cool. If I could go back in time, I would be buying a lot of hardware and saving it, because there's a interesting trend I've noticed among millennial YouTubers to discuss throwback tech. And I've seen a couple of channels now where either the channel is fully devoted to throwback tech.
Right.
People like LGR, Lazy Game Reviews, which mostly does 1995 to 2005 computer tech. And then people, you know, that even do more modern stuff doing series of throwback things. So Mr. Mobile is one of the channels I follow, and he's done throwback stuff. And even a car and automotive creator that I follow is now doing a channel called Tech Throwback. And so it got me thinking, what is it about that era from, you know, about 2000 to 2010, if you're talking mobile technology, right, or 95 to 2005, if you're talking desktop, laptop technology, right, that's so interesting to these groups? I mean, it could be that it's simply that they grew up with it, so it's nostalgia. But then I started thinking, maybe it's deeper than that, because if you think about the differences between a 95 and 2005 computer, you know, where we went from Windows 95 to Windows XP, and we went from very constrained processing, very constrained memory, very constrained disk space, to having as much as we pretty much could need at that time to do whatever we want to do.
Yeah.
And the same sort of thing with cell phones, where you go from 2000 to 2010. You go from flip phones and Motorola Tacks of certain, you know, sizes, yep, to the first iPhone, basically, and modern smartphones. It is, yeah, pretty crazy, because the jump in the last 10 years from 2012 to 2022 has not been as revolutionary. So
no.
Maybe it's simply that that 10-year period was a giant amount of time.
For the millennials, this is steampunk, you know?
Yeah. It kind of is. And it's interesting and then it makes me think about what's the next big leap that we're going to have. Because obviously for us, you know, we've talked a few times that we've noticed a stagnation where,
yes,
you know, if you compare an iPhone 4 to an iPhone 13, you will still identify them as iPhones. You will not look at one and go, oh, that one is so smaller, that one's so different, it's not even an iPhone. No, if,
right,
I handed you an iPhone 4 today, you could still know how to use it perfectly, because it hasn't changed that much in 10
yeah.
years.
Another
Whereas
hand,
if I gave
oh, go ahead.
You, well, yeah. Yeah, if all you had ever used was the iPhone, the first generation iPhone, and I gave you a Qualcomm 2700, QCB 2700, that was the epitome of a old school cell phone that had a monochrome screen. I think one revision of it could text, but I don't think the original could. And you had to use the, you know, QWERTY, or not the QWERTY, but the digit pad to text out things. And yeah, I don't think people would be able to use it as easily,
yeah,
as you could use a 10-year-old iPhone.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, the jump from the StarTAC and the BlackBerry and the Trio to you know, the color screen phones is huge, right? So
yeah.
So it's kind of, you got to kind of wonder, you know, where it is that we're going, right? So, you know, and I was just thinking, you know, my first smartish phone was a Sprint phone with some, I think it was GPRS data or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, because I was just thinking about it. It was black and white, just had a regular DTMF keyboard, no QWERTY or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the name of the company was a Japanese company with it makes sense when I think about it. The name of the company is Denso, which is, in English, doesn't translate all that well. I mean, doesn't sound like, you know, you're Denso, but I was just thinking, why did they name it that? And I didn't look it up, but I was just thinking, Denki means electricity in Japanese.
Uh-huh.
So it might be electric, you know, devices, which is, if I go look it up, I'll bet you that's why Denso is named that. But anywho.
Yeah, and you are making me think of my last non-smartphone was a Motorola V70, and I did have a cable that had USB on one end and then the proprietary connector on,
yes,
the other, that would let you turn it into a mobile. There was no such thing as a hotspot. It wasn't doing it over Wi-Fi. A mobile,
right,
router, you know, so that you could get data over GPRS,
yep,
painfully slow.
Yes.
But you could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember I had the very same cable set up. I remember taking a picture of it, have it somewhere, and I remember using it too, but you know, you got to sit in the hotel room. You can't do it like just sitting around, because if you did it out in broad daylight, people would think you're making a bomb and probably call the police on you. But I remember sitting in a hotel room getting hooked up because, you know, the hotel didn't have Wi-Fi back then. In fact, I didn't have Wi-Fi back then. And yeah. they may not have had any kind of a port usable, you know, may have been hardwired into the wall with no RJ11 to unplug and plug your modem into. So, yeah, I remember using those.
I think about the funniest example I can think about was, you know, remember there were these things that were travel routers?
Yes.
For a brief amount of time before every hotel had Wi-Fi.
I have them.
You know, that's even crazy. I have a few around here, too. The idea that for a very brief time, you just took your Wi-Fi with you to have that. And now
how quaint.
I think pretty much the worst hotel in town will still probably have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And for those who don't know what John is talking about, hotels did have Ethernet by this point. So they had moved past RJ11. They had RJ45 for Ethernet, but no Wi-Fi. And so you had to carry your own Wi-Fi hotspot with, well, not a hotspot, a Wi-Fi, like John said, access point router. And it was, some of them are pretty darn small, like the size of a pack of cigarettes. So they're very, you know, travel ready.
Yep.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I'm still thinking about the millennial question, though. Why, you know, why? Yeah, steampunk? I don't know. But that said.
If you think about some of the stuff they like to talk about the variety. That's variety. What I've seen most of the thing, where it's, here are 30 phones that came out from 2000 to 2010.
Right.
And look how different they are. They're
That's
different
true.
Colors, they're different sizes, they're different, you know, hinges and different sliders and this and that. And
oh, sliders!
This or that. Yeah, and it does make you think about how everything is pretty boring. I mean, we have the foldables today that are starting to come back, the Samsung Fold and the Flip and all that. So we're starting to get back to something interesting other than just the, you know, candy bar slab phone. But, man, back then you had some really interesting looking phones and devices.
I mean, just looking back on one platform, you know, the Windows CE, Windows Mobile platform that you and I used a lot. Wow, we sure had a lot of choices, and it was just fun to get a new one to play with or get a loaner or something. And even though they're basically functioned more or less the same because they're all Windows CE, they were just so dynamic in their design choices. Like the Clio, the Vadim Clio, that was folding, you know, notebook type device. And yeah. And, you know, the little tiny BlackBerry QWERTY keyboards that became really popular for a while. So, yeah.
I remember switching between sizes of devices. You know, you'd have a device that, you know, you'd be like, well, my daily driver device. You and I were, I think, at the same time we were, you know, we'd have three or four devices that we'd switch off on, you know, here and there. And so it'd be like, well, this week I'm using the device that nicely fits in these jeans. And next week, you know, I might be using the device that is a little too big. And
Need a bag.
Now they're all about the same size. Yeah, need a bag next week.
And, you know, the funny thing was back then, and this might be part of the, you know, one small aspect of their, back then in the 2000s, tiny was the thing, right? Smaller and smaller phones.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even Microsoft went from the Pocket PC phone edition design to the Windows Mobile smartphone, I think, design, which had no touchscreen. DTMF keyboard. Sometimes they had a QWERTY keyboard like a BlackBerry, but they're really tiny. I mean, really tiny. You could probably fit them in a car key case by today's standard. You know. So and I was going to say, back in the aughts, I think it was around then, or maybe 2010, maybe just in the teens. I actually did a column called Jurassic Tech for the revived Byte. Online only Byte magazine. So, you know, I'm guilty as anybody of looking back nostalgically on technology, and I sometimes think about reviving that. Maybe I'll do that after I retire. Go back through all my stuff and talk about them one at a time.
Well, and thinking about this, you know, we were talking about bags earlier and how people carry a bunch of stuff, and it's interesting to me that people carry different stuff. So I put a link in our show notes for a bag that man, if you're thinking about what people used to carry,
yeah,
this is the from Road Wired, what they called their Mega Media Bag. And I still have two of these bags. They are absolutely gigantic bags. They are messenger-style bags, and they have way too many compartments for anyone to ever keep straight. But you can store everything in these things if everything you need is mid-2000s tech.
Yeah.
So mostly flat, peripheral-type things, a lot of little pockets for, you know, the review yep. that I'll link to has in it a PDA, a small cell phone, a couple of two-way radios, a bunch of cables for different connections, a mouse, a laptop, and a docking port for that laptop, a power brick. So if you're carrying all of that in the 2000s, then yeah, you needed a bag that accordioned out like this thing did. Today, if you're carrying a bunch of stuff, oh, Todd is showing me a very similar bag. Yeah,
with wheels.
I've got the Mega Media Wheel Edition too, which is even scarier. It's actually still my camera bag because it's got the little cutouts for storing a DSLR. But if you think about today, what most people want, I want a bag that I can not shove just tech in. I need a bag that I can throw my sweatshirt in and my water bottle and
yeah, water bottle.
You know, some snacks and a few other things. So I think we still need big bags,
yep.
but we do not need these accordion-style bags where you could throw a couple of folders, a little, you know, paper folders
yes.
and binders and all those
that.
Things in. But yeah, I hold on to the Mega Media bags that I have. I have the leather version and I have the ballistic nylon version and I have the rolling version just because they are very nostalgia for me. And I, you know, I'll get rid of other bags, but those were the first, I remember those were the first really nice bags that I bought,
yeah.
you know, a bag that cost over $100.
I should note that the bag that the John is pointing out, the Road Wired Mega Media is 5 pounds. This is an empty bag.
Yes. My shoulder knew that it was 5 pounds every time I used it. But it's definitely interesting if, you know, if any of our listeners don't know this bag, go take a look at it. Just Google it or look at some of the reviews. That was what you needed in the era of vintage tech to carry everything you needed to carry. Today, give me a good backpack or, you know, Apple designed me something nice that can carry all of the stuff from my life. And of course, back then people were still carrying water bottles and, you know, sweatshirts and all that, but they were carrying two bags. You know, you
yeah.
had your computer bag, your work bag, and then you had your backpack that had your other junk in it for your life.
Yeah, but you are right. It wasn't a Road Wired bag, but something very similar that I just showed to John on our video feed is, you know, I used to throw in a spare clothes in there when I traveled in case they mm-hmm. lost my check-in baggage. And because I did use check-in baggage back then, I threw in, had a spare shirt and pants and so forth. And it carried everything that I could possibly need for one day without my check-in if, you know, something happened. I had before they would like pull you out of the line, I also had a foldable razor, you know, to shave with, a shaver, non-electric, but it was pretty cool because it folded out, looked like a big fountain pen. You would fold it out so that the razor showed and, you know, you could shave your face. And in the bottom, there was a button that you would push and it had shaving cream in it. you couldn't refill it, but, you know, it's a one-time thing. Or, you know, one set of times thing. So once it was gone, it was gone. But I thought it was the coolest thing in the world back when I, you know, that was my
yeah.
backup in case I couldn't get to my electric shaver when I was traveling. But yeah, very cool bag. I bought a couple of these, some with wheels, some without. I think I would get back pains if I carried them today.
Yeah, I know I would. I don't carry. I carry anymore a bag that has enough for my MacBook, my
yeah.
iPad Pro, my iPad Mini, and I can shove my sweatshirt in there. I can shove a water bottle in, a couple of, you know, snacks, and maybe a spare battery or two, and a wallet of cards I don't use very often. So I do have much less that I need to carry on a regular basis, but still do carry things.
Back in the
nice
day.
To get back to the idea of not having anything.
Yeah, but back in that day, that's how most of us traveled. I mean, I think you and I and all of our friends that used to go to the MVP summits and so forth, we were all pretty similarly, accessorized for our junk. Some more than others with, giant Scotty vest jackets with 37 pockets or whatever, filled to the brim. But certainly. Okay, and I was just thinking, one more thing about the Apple announcement. I don't expect to see it at Apple announcement, but that keyboard, that Mac and a keyboard thing that we're talking about last podcast, boy, if that came out, even though I really don't need a desktop Mac, I would be very tempted to buy it if it were reasonably priced, say in a Mac Mini price range.
Yeah, I suspect I would be too. So I really hope Apple doesn't come out with that because it would be very tempting.
Well, we'll see if they used to be famous when Steve Jobs was still around. They used to be famous for their one more thing, where it's just a complete out of the left field surprise to everybody being presented to. And they haven't really done that in a number of years now, but I certainly hope they have something
No, I keep hoping.
surprising.
I keep hoping for a one more thing.
Well, we shall wait and see. Oh, the other thing that has been rumored, very rumored, I don't expect to see this for maybe years, is a foldable iPad. Like a 13-inch iPad that folds.
I expect we will see Apple get into the foldable market as soon as everyone else figures it out.
Apple took 10 years from the introduction of the Microsoft tablet PC to the iPad. And of course, nobody sees a tablet PC anymore. But the iPad's still doing pretty well. So yeah, sometimes it takes 10 years for them to figure it out. But boy, when they do, they really get it right. Then again, there's the Apple sock, but we won't go there.
And Apple Ping, the social network
Apple.
that just
Oh, I
died.
forgot about it. Goodness. All righty. Well, that is that. So we actually filled out another almost 40 minutes. I didn't think we had anything to talk about, but as usual, I am wrong. And
We always
YouTube.
come up with something.
If you want to throw us, $50,000 to do a video version of this podcast, John and I will split it evenly and we'll figure it out. So just let us
I mean,
know.
we already did do some video stuff a few,
We did
5 or 6 years ago, so
We did try.
we just bring it back.
Yeah. And we've got better cameras and stuff now. So,
Oh, yeah.
we could probably do a better job. All righty, John. I will talk to you next time. Thank you as usual. And to our 5 listeners, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again.